This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Rick Britton joins us in studio on Fridays to talk about local history, and we've spent much of the past few months sort of focused on the Civil War era and talking about some of the local folks who were involved in the war, and then sort of expanding out and talking about certain battles. But starting last week, we sort of switched over into doing a little Charlottesville 101 because we have a whole lot of folks who are new to this area who haven't had a chance to get downtown for some of the tours. Yeah. And so this is a good opportunity. Sit back, relax, and learn a little bit about Charlottesville.
Yeah, I got a question for you first. Have you ever seen a tractor with a radio on it?
Yes.
You have?
Oh,
okay, because I haven't.
The
newer ones now? Yeah, they've got radios and everything?
Oh, gosh.
CD players?
TVs. Yeah, some of the big indoor cabs, you know?
That's wild.
Oh, yeah, heated seats, TVs.
So maybe there are some people out on their tractors right now.
I actually had somebody come up to me one time and say, my dad listens to your show in the afternoons when he's out on his tractor.
That is pretty
hay
cool.
In the field. So,
that's cool.
You know, or just mowing out there. So hello to you all. Thank you for listening. Of course, they're not listening to me. They're listening to folks like you who come on the show and share a little bit of your brilliance and insight.
Wow. How can you follow something like that? It's got to be so profound. No, I thought it would be great. You know, we were talking about some of the old buildings in Court Square and the statuary. We talked about the Stonewall Jackson statue and everything.
Yeah.
I think it might be good to move a little bit west and talk about Vinegar Hill. And so I did a little bit of reading. I knew a little bit about it, but I wanted to get the dates right. Vinegar Hill, you know, goes way back to the early days of the 19th century. So Charlottesville had only been about 40 years old or so. And you could almost call Vinegar Hill like the first suburb of Charlottesville.
It really?
grew up just to the west of the old downtown. It was incorporated into the city itself in 1835. But, you know, having been incorporated in 1835, that tells me that it began, you know,
well before that.
Well before that.
Let's start by telling folks what it is, because a lot of folks who might be new to town might think Vinegar Hill just means a movie theater.
Yeah,
so they might not
idea.
Know it actually means it's a part of downtown.
Right. And so if you think about West Main, if you think about the mall, and you think about how if you're standing in front of the Omni, West Main Street, which is the mall, goes up that hill. Okay, right where the Omni sits. So that little intersection.
Up the hill to the federal courthouse.
Yeah,
up there.
Up the hill going west.
Towards the Lewis and Clark statue.
Right, going west. So think about West Main Street going up the hill from in front of the Omni to the Lewis and Clark and Sacagawea statue, right, by Charles Keck. And go a few blocks to the west. Think about that as the southern boundary. And then go south. To go north to Preston Avenue, which I just discovered
towards the
today.
County office building.
Yeah, I just discovered today that was Barracks Road, and it was renamed much later Preston Avenue.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so that was Barracks Road because it goes out to Barracks Road, the intersection at Barracks Road and Seminole Trail.
Cool.
So think about that as the north and south boundary of Vinegar Hill.
So roughly from the county office building over to the Lewis and Clark statue,
right,
is the north and south boundaries of Vinegar Hill area.
And a couple of blocks to the west. So going down
the
a
Jefferson
little bit
School.
Further. Yeah, to include the Jefferson School and that restaurant, the corner where that restaurant is that's now a Virginian restaurant. Of course, that was Awful Arthur's, but that's Inge's store.
An old family grocery store.
Yeah, so that is probably one of the few structures of Vinegar Hill, one of the few original structures that's still standing. The section along West Main Street was pretty much businesses. And then going down the hill to the north to the Commonwealth Building today. Is that what it's called? Yeah, the Commonwealth Building, which is at the bottom, and then the County Courthouse. That was mostly houses. Another name for Vinegar Hill was Random Row. And Random Row, they say, was named probably because the houses were built in a pretty random fashion. And if you look at a map of it, a map that shows you the layout of the houses, they seem to go in every which way direction. And the streets, the little roads down there, too, don't seem to conform to any, you know, city plat, any formal plat of the city.
So and it was largely, predominantly, we're talking with Rick Britton, throughout most of its history, largely an African-American neighborhood part of town. Is that right?
No. It started off as an Irish neighborhood.
Very cool.
And that's where it got its name, Vinegar Hill. And that's an interesting part of the story for me. is that, and of course we'll get into the African Americans inhabiting Random Row or Vinegar Hill, but it started off as Irish, and there's been a debate going on for, you know, almost 200 years now about where the name originated. And some people said that, well, the Irish use a lot of vinegar in their cooking, and so it smelled like vinegar and it became Vinegar Hill. Another story goes that they were producing illegal whiskey somewhere on Vinegar Hill.
Hello.
And in order to sell it, they would mark the casks vinegar. Even though it was whiskey. I don't believe either of those is true. It turns out that I believe that in 1798 in Ireland, in Wexford, I'm not sure, but the town of Enniscorthy is in Wexford County.
Okay.
There was a very large agrarian revolt, and the battle that lost this revolt, and it was the first big revolt in Ireland against the English, it was put down at the Battle of Vinegar Hill. And we're talking about a huge battle with 14,000 Irish and 10,000 British soldiers. And the main battle was fought on Vinegar Hill. And so it became songs and poems were written about Vinegar Hill. Now, at the top of the hill, while the Irish were there inhabiting Vinegar Hill, mostly Irish, right at the Lewis and Clark statue, there were a number of taverns. And the old story goes that Vinegar Hill was ruled by the O'Tooles, the O'Tracys, and the O'Donovans. And that in the evenings, as the Irish are wont, they would flock to the taverns, get really plastered, and start singing these songs, then go out to where that intersection is, to where the Lewis and Clark statue was, and there was a trough out there, and they would have a huge fist fight, and the losers would get dunked in this trough. So I really believe, I honestly believe that Vinegar Hill really is named for that battle in 1798.
Because this was the part of town where the Irish lived.
Where the Irish lived, and they loved singing about this agrarian revolt.
That's great. Rick Britton is our guest, and we're talking local history, Charlottesville 101, how Vinegar Hill got its name. Well, that makes all the sense in the world.
I think so.
Yeah,
I think so.
So this was predominantly where the Irish lived and often worked and owned businesses in central Virginia.
Right, and this went on for a while that it was predominantly Irish, because a lot of the Irish came here to put in the railroads, and so that happened in the in this area of central Virginia around 1850. So you can see how it was an Irish, predominantly Irish neighborhood for a while. Then the blacks first started moving in right after the Civil War, and then by the turn of the century, by 1900, it was predominantly black, and then remained that way until the 1960s.
I wonder if that had something to do with post-Civil War. You had a lot of African Americans no longer enslaved moving towards urban centers for work.
Exactly, looking for work.
So a lot of them might have come to Charlottesville and settled in that region.
I think that's absolutely the case. And when you think about the demographics, I was telling somebody this the other day, and it kind of blew them away. I mean, the demographics of the county, in 1860, the county and the city were half African American, half, 50%. The vast majority of those people enslaved. Nowadays, what is the demographic? It's close to the national average. It's like 13-14%.
Which that might even be high, I think.
I don't know. Here in Charlottesville, that might be high. Yeah. So think about that, how that demographic has changed in 100 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Half of the population of this area was enslaved African Americans. So yeah, you could see how those people displaced at the end of the war would come into the city looking for work.
And a lot of them settled in the Vinegar Hill area, and that's how that got to be known as a largely African-American district. And, of course, Vinegar Hill now is the west end of the downtown mall, sort of over to the Jefferson School, up to the county office building, and down to the Lewis and Clark statue, sort of that whole western end of downtown.
That's right. That's right.
And there was also a lot of not great property. I mean, it was sort of low-lying property, a lot of exposed water,
Streams running right down the hill.
Ridge Street, High Street, these were sort of the nicer places. They were removed from the water, and so the roads ran along those ridges. That was ideal ideal properties, places to build your homes, more expensive lots.
Right.
And
right.
those homes in the Vinegar Hill area would have been less expensive. And so you would have seen some of the poor among us living in that area.
Right. But it was a thriving commercial district, too, with all of these businesses along the mostly along the north side of West Main Street, going down that hill, down to where the Omni is, you know, and predominantly owned, vastly, the vast majority of them owned by African Americans.
So
there were barber shops, there were restaurants, there were furniture stores, there were seamstresses and tailor shops. Just wanted to mention that I discovered a couple of famous folks supposedly born in Vinegar Hill. One is Mosby Monroe Parsons. He's buried up at Maplewood Cemetery. He went out west, and he was born in Vinegar Hill in 1822. Went out west, studied the law, and became the Attorney General of the new state of Missouri. During the Civil War, he became a Confederate general, and so he was fairly prominent out west. I don't think anybody out there realizes he's from Little Vinegar Hill in Charlottesville, Virginia. But perhaps more interesting, Charlie Ferguson, who was a pitcher in the majors in the 1880s and supposedly was a four-time 20-plus winner, and many people credit him with inventing the curveball.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. Now we need to, you know,
Charlottesville?
I've seen this in a couple of different places.
Well,
so
there
we
needs
have to
be a plaque.
Yeah, there ought to be a plaque.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. The Task Force on Historic Resources that writes those local plaques, tell somebody we need a Charlie Ferguson plaque on Vinegar Hill.
Yeah. You know, I think I've mentioned it to them before. But there's a lot of great plaques that need to be.
Yes, many plaques left as yet unwritten.
And you don't necessarily want to go around and put a plaque on every building.
No.
You know,
but we have that type of town.
We do.
Where you really
we
could.
Do. You know, in Old Town Alexandria, they got all these plaques. And I went up to one. I saw one. It was a beautiful old building. Looks like it was, you know, built in the late 1700s. I went up to the building and the plaque read, "Here in 1781, nothing happened."
Rick Britton, you can check him out online at rickbritton.com, local author and historian, cartographer. Vinegar Hill, we were talking about all the African-American, originally yep. Irish and then African-American, these right. businesses that lined West Main Street. And right. for folks who just moved here, they should know that you could drive down West Main Street heading towards downtown, past the Lewis and Clark statue,
right.
turn to your left, and you could go right down where the pedestrian mall is today. That was Main Street. And all along your left there, where the courthouse is now,
that's exactly
and where
right.
the Omni is, all of that, that's sort of open, where the road goes out to McIntyre Road, all of that was a line of storefronts.
Black businesses.
And they're all gone.
They're all gone, yeah. What happened was, I guess, as they get into the 1950s, 1960s, people decided that, you know, the University of Virginia was so important. And as people were traveling downtown, they came upon this area and they didn't like the way it looked. And so they decided that the city was going to redevelop, which is another word for moving and, you know, raising and moving people out of this neighborhood. The sad part about it is, Coy, they actually had a vote. For the citizens of Charlottesville, I think it was in 1962, I believe, they took the vote. But they added a poll tax, which meant that the inhabitants of Vinegar Hill, you know, couldn't even vote as to the future of their own community. That's just one of those sad times in the history of Charlottesville.
All part of quote-unquote urban renewal.
Right.
And it was 1962 to 63, and I'm just looking here at an old article that I wrote about the Meadow Creek Parkway, and this is in there. Over 30 commercial businesses.
There you go.
Over 160 families are forced to close and relocate.
Right.
As Vinegar Hill was literally razed. They just mowed everything down.
Right.
Yeah.
And in some cases, they set fire to the buildings, just burned them down.
Really?
Yeah, burned them to the foundation. Yeah.
And I guess the feeling was among the white folks who ran the place at the time, well, you know, this is not nice. We'll build some public buildings for you.
It was an eyesore.
Yeah, this isn't pretty. Charlottesville's growing, and we don't want all this nasty stuff close to our beautiful downtown.
Right. Or close to the university.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a pretty sad time.
So Vinegar Hill was razed, completely gone. And I remember seeing an old Daily Progress from the mid-60s where this architect or artist drew, like, this could be the future of Vinegar Hill.
All the beautiful things you're going to build.
With these skyscrapers and the monorails and everything. And this is, like, what Vinegar Hill will look like. Well, the sad truth is, Vinegar Hill, for many, many years, was just, for a long time, was just an empty field.
It was a field going down that hill to the Commonwealth Building. And what did we get in return? We got shopping centers, right? And that little, and a McDonald's. And what else? There's a Wendy's, a McDonald's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what we got.
Yeah.
And a federal courthouse, because all of a sudden they could get this land right near downtown.
Right, at a good price.
We got the Omni, because the city was looking to get a convention center close to downtown.
Which came in the 1980s, early
1980s. The 1980s, and was a bit of a public boondoggle. A lot of public money was sunk into the Omni to keep it afloat.
It was. And in return, on Fridays, you could go down to the Omni, and it was a free buffet if you ordered a drink.
Really?
Yeah, to try to pay the citizens back.
And Fridays After Five actually started right
on
down
that
there.
On that side of the mall. On that side, right.
A long time ago, right near...
The same time.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, there you go. Rick Britton, local author and historian. And where else besides Vinegar Hill?
Well, let's go to the other side of town. One of my favorite places, and I give tours of this little section of downtown Charlottesville every now and then, it's Maplewood Cemetery I'm talking about, and not a lot of people visit, and there's some fairly important folks back there. It was established...
Where is Maplewood Cemetery?
Again? Maplewood Cemetery. It's about 3.5 acres, and it's between Lexington, so it's just west of Lexington, in between Maple, 8th, and Kelly Avenue.
So it's the cemetery that's right near Court Square. You could sort of, a little jog from there.
Yeah, it's about, 2 blocks.
That's the cemetery that's on the Historical Society's Halloween ghost
tour,
right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right, on the Spirit Walk.
Right.
And it's really popular, but it isn't, not a lot of attention is paid to it, yet there are 2,500 folks back there. The remains of 2,500 people, and the reason is it was the first official burial ground for the little town of Charlottesville, established in 1827. So that's pretty early. So it's going almost 200 years now. There's some really neat folks back there. One of my favorites is there was a circus performer. I've forgotten his name now. But a circus performer who died in town. He was part of a traveling circus, and he was killed during the circus performance here in Charlottesville.
Do we know how?
I don't think we know how. I think it's just been lost to time. But that's like back in the 1830s. That guy died in a traveling circus.
That's got to be in one of the old
newspapers. I should look that up
because they had those newspapers then.
I should look that up.
McKinney started the first newspaper, and he came down and started it because once they knew the university was going to be here.
Oh yeah,
he knew there would be in need of a newspaper, and one of his first clients was Thomas Jefferson, who would send him postings about progress of the building of the university.
And so, what year was that? So we're talking about what?
It 1820s? Was. I can't remember his first name. It was 1820s because University of Virginia opened charter in 1819, opened March of 1825.
25, right.
Right. So it would have been in the 1820s when McKinney started the newspaper in Charlottesville. So I'm sure it's in there if it was in the 1830s
that
he died.
I should look that up. We've talked a lot about how Charlottesville became part of the Charlottesville had a general hospital during the Civil War. And it's kind of interesting because the first wounded arrived here just after the First Battle of Manassas, which was July 21st, 1861. And there's a whole row. I just found this fascinating. There's a whole row of Confederate graves there. And if you look at the markers, they're men from the 4th South Carolina, 8th Georgia, and 4th Virginia regiments, all three heavily engaged at First Manassas. So when I take tours back then, I call them, here are some of the men who arrived in that first train load, in a driving rainstorm with nobody to meet them, and here are some of the guys. So unfortunately, they were wounded, mortally wounded at Manassas, made that long train ride, 100 miles down here, and then died, in Little Charlottesville, so far away from home. Yeah, so those guys are down there. And there's a matron of one of the hospitals that was established. The hospital, as we've spoken about, was many different buildings. And
During
the Civil War. And Mrs. Margaret Ryan was the matron of one of the hospitals that was established by South Carolina to treat South Carolina soldiers here. And she contracted an illness from one of the men that she was taking care of and died here, so far away from home.
And just remind folks, most of the people who died, the soldiers who died during the Civil War, actually died of disease, dysentery and typhoid, and from battle wounds.
Dysentery consumption, which is tuberculosis, but dysentery was probably the number one killer dysentery and diarrhea.
How do you get that? Just because they were just...
You know, I'm really not sure.
Is that bugs in their food? Or, I mean, what is it?
Yeah,
is it
bugs, and then you can't hold on to any of the stuff that you're eating. And so you're not getting any nutrition. So you just continually lose weight. You basically starve to death. Yeah.
Oh, God.
A guy that we talked about last week, Paul Goodloe McIntyre, you know, who had been born here in 1860 and then went off to New York and made money on Wall Street and came back and gave us all of these statues and all of these parks in Charlottesville and at the University of Virginia. He's buried there at Maplewood Cemetery. So one of the first great benefactors of the little town of Charlottesville.
Does he have like some big obelisk or
no,
is it just a regular?
It's pretty nice. It's a pretty nice stone. I don't think it's the nicest one there, but it's pretty good size. It's pretty good size.
You know, let's make a mental note. When you come on again, let's do this same thing for the UVA Cemetery.
Absolutely.
Because I know that you know that place like the back of your hand.
Yeah,
so.
I wrote a little walking tour.
Yes, you did. Yeah. So let's remember that for the future to tell folks, because a lot of folks don't even know that UVA has a big cemetery.
I know. Well, it's kind of obscured by a Confederate cemetery that sits sort of in front of it, so...
Which UVA has how many soldiers in it? Like 2,000?
1,097.
Yeah. Gosh.
Yeah. I was just talking about Mosby Monroe Parsons, born in Vinegar Hill. They did bring him back to Charlotte. Actually, they put up a headstone to him. He actually is one of the guys who fled the United States after the end of the Civil War, went to Mexico, and died in a combat down in Mexico. This guy is one of my favorite in all of Charlottesville history, Benjamin Franklin Ficklin. Ficklin had been born here in 1827, went to VMI, got thrown out of VMI. He's just this big cut-up, a huge prankster. Supposedly fought in the Mexican War, but he might have made up the stories about being in the Mexican War. Went out west, got involved, because the family here was very prominent, very wealthy, got involved in the delivery of mail and the transporting of goods. Well, he is actually credited by the historians who know as being the man who thought of the idea of the Pony Express. And he's from Albemarle County, Virginia.
Get out of here.
No.
Are you serious?
Absolutely true.
That's too cool.
Benjamin Franklin Ficklin.
There needs to be a plaque.
There needs to be a plaque. But wait, there's more. The Civil War breaks out. Ficklin comes back to Virginia, becomes, for a while, quartermaster general, because, as I said, the family is pretty prominent. After all, he'd been to VMI for a little while. Got involved then in the blockade running, and for a while operated three blockade runners, made a lot of cash.
What's that?
Is running goods through the federal blockade. You know, they established a blockade of the southern ports, the federal navy did, trying to stop goods, you know, war material mainly, from getting into the Confederacy. Well, it was very profitable to build a sleek ship, you know, those typically coal-burning, not a masted ship, a coal-burning ship, and sneak through the blockade at night and bring in all kinds of items, war material, but also, you know, ladies' clothing and stuff, and sell it at inflated prices. The blockade runners made so much money during the Civil War, you know, and Rhett Butler was a blockade runner in Gone with the Wind.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and the guys involved in this were kind of shady because they were making a lot of money, you know, off of the Confederacy. The story goes that it was so profitable that you could afford to lose your entire vessel after only two runs. That's how profitable this business enterprise was. So he ran three, ended up with all this cash, and you know, Monticello during the Civil War was seized by the Confederate States government as alien property because it had belonged to Uriah Phillips Levy, who was a commodore in the United States Navy. Now, he had died in 62, but it was seized in 64, sold at auction. Well, Benjamin Franklin Ficklin shows up with $80,000 in Confederate bills and buys Monticello. So he's a one-time owner of Monticello. Nobody knows about this guy.
I never heard this.
I know. Nobody knows that he was a one-time owner of Monticello. Now, at the end of the war, that was totally null and void, you know, the Confederate seizure and everything. So he only owned it for about a year. But the reason he bought it, well, he wanted to own Monticello, but his brother, Slaughter Ficklin, who's also buried at Maplewood Cemetery right next to him, at the time he owned Belmont. So the two of them had adjoining properties, had adjoining plantations.
So Ficklin, the one who bought Monticello, actually moved in.
But he had his father move in. His father moved in. No, this guy was busy running. He was busy making cash off.
So he bought Monticello as like a retirement home for his dad.
For his dad. Yeah. but wait, there's more. This guy's story is unbelievable. There's more. This guy ends up in Washington as the war ends. And because he looked so, in fact, they said he had the looks of a refined pirate. When Lincoln was assassinated in April of 65, Ficklin was one of the men arrested for being involved on the suspicions of his being involved in the conspiracy.
Wow.
Now, he had...
Was he?
No, he wasn't. And he had had prominent friends after being out west and getting involved in these huge businesses out west and founding the Pony Express. So actually, northern congressmen stepped forward and said, we know this guy. He's okay. He looks like this, but he's really not. You know, he's really not a bad guy. So they let him go. And then later on, he went back out west, got involved in transporting goods and the mail, the U.S. mail out west. That was a very lucrative private business that you could get in, transporting the U.S. mail. And then he ended up dying in the Willard Hotel.
In D.C.?
In D.C. In 1871, he choked to death on a fishbone. This guy had just an amazing life.
What a story.
Yeah, yeah. So he's buried there. He's one of my favorite people.
And he's from here?
And he's from Albemarle County. Yeah.
Wow. Now, you said at one time that his brother owned Belmont. A lot of folks who are new to our area might just think that that's a neighborhood or a part of town, but there's
if you think of that neighborhood as being a huge plantation, and the original house still stands.
Which is called Belmont.
Which is called Belmont. But if you think of that place as being one large farm, one large plantation... That at the time of the Civil War was the property of Slaughter Ficklin, Benjamin Franklin Ficklin's brother.
Right. Yeah. Later developed along with Fry Spring as one of those places at the end of the trolley line.
That's
where
right.
You could buy lots for a couple hundred dollars to build your house.
That's right.
And the land was really cheap because they wanted you to ride the trolley.
Right. And some of the early inhabitants of Belmont, the neighborhood, not the plantation, were the train workers who then could live right nearby. Because there was a huge repair shop operation going on in downtown Charlottesville for the trains.
We're talking local history with Rick Britton. We have a couple minutes left. Recently, I had a conversation with somebody about the oldest building in Charlottesville.
Oh yeah,
and I think there is some brick building on the Court Square that's like late 1700s, but. You said that there's one even earlier than that.
Yeah, on the property known as the farm, and we talked about Tarleton's raid and how Tarleton captured Charlottesville in June of 1781. There is still extant on that property the old kitchen from the original estate of the farm. And that one was there. That building was there in 1781 and was already, I think, 15, 20 years old. So that might be the largest building in Charlottesville.
The oldest building. And that might be mid-1750s or 60s.
Right.
Wow, which is old for this area.
It is old for this area.
And that's for Charlottesville, but the
and that wasn't originally Charlottesville, so...
Right.
Yeah.
That was in the county.
Right. Charlottesville expanded to the east in that direction.
So all of those old estates out in Albemarle County, there's none standing that are older than that? Than the mid-1700s? I guess they're not, because they weren't there.
That's right. That's right. None that I know of that are extant. Although somebody can call up and tell us.
I can't think of one that would be that old.
Yeah.
Rick Britton, local author and historian. And did you want to? We got like 1 minute left. Was there something on West Main Street that you were?
Well, no. I just wanted to tell you. There's one other fella back there that's kind of prominent in Maplewood. It's Armistead Lindsay Long. And during the Civil War, he was Robert E. Lee's military secretary. The neat thing about him was after the war, he went blind. He was an engineer on the Virginia canals, but he went blind in 1870, and President Ulysses S. Grant appointed his wife, made her the postmistress of Charlottesville. So here is, one man who had fought on the other side, granting a patronage position, basically, to this other family, a family that fought on the opposite side.
Interesting.
And so that's how that family was able to stay solvent, because Grant made Mrs. Long the postmistress of Charlottesville. And then Long, while blind and using a special slate, wrote the well-regarded memoirs of Robert E. Lee, his military and personal history.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah, and he's buried in Maplewood
Cemetery.
There's
a faint bell ringing in my head that I think there was a postmaster at the university, which of course was a separate post office.
I think you're thinking of General Thomas Rosser.
Yeah, is that
right?
For
a while was postmaster of the university,
and he wouldn't do the pledge after the Civil War as we lost his job or something like that?
That sounds like Rosser.
Yeah.
It does.
Rick Britton, you can check him out online at rickbritton.com. That's B-R-I-T-T-O-N. Thank you, Rick, so much.
It was great. Enjoyed it.
Absolutely. I appreciate you coming in. And have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.